imagine there's no America.
Welcome to Civilization Jihad Awareness, and I'd like to thank you for coming and taking a chance to grow today and learn about the Refugee Resettlement Program. It's important to understand the differences of what's happening in the world today, the growing change of population throughout the United States, why it's happening, and why it's being orchestrated is one story. But to understand what's actually behind it with the Refugee Resettlement Program, what's actually happening that's being measured and examined today will blow your mind. I'm going to share with you today part of my affidavit with expert witness test. It's basically the expert witness testimony. It's on record right now, public record, in the case of Bill Breaux versus Nikki Haley and POTUS Obama. I don't like to call him president, so I'll give him the title POTUS, and we'll talk about that. This case names as the following as defendants. We've got Nikki Haley. I did say Obama. We have the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, the South Carolina Highway Patrol, South Carolina Department of Public Safety, Environmental Control, Comptroller General, Lutheran Services of Carolinas, all in various, now the reason this says all actually Duesenberg, South Carolina, World Relief Corporation of North, the National Association of Jails, the Lutheran World Relief. Now, since they brought this case federal, which was originally filed state, these new defendants, I said Barack Obama, who is the chief executive officer as president of the United States. We have Jay Johnson, Department of Homeland Security. We have Gil Kekowski, Commissioner of the Department of Customs and Border Protection. Ronald Vitello, Deputy Chief Border Patrol, Department of Customs and Border Protection. We have Thomas Winkowski, Acting Director of ICE. Loretta Lynch, Department of Justice and Agencies. That's the new AG. And Jacob Lutz, who is the Secretary of the Department of Treasury and Agencies. Now, I'm just going to read you part of this, and then I'm going to pull in people. I'm going to pull in Lauren Martell in a while. We're going to pull her in for a short while. My goal today is to get across a message about the Refugee Resettlement Program that people, the stuff that people don't know. So I'm just going to read to you the stuff that I have written about, and just look at me as a I'm the research writer. I'm the guy who digs in and finds things. And my goal is to put stuff in common sense ways so the average guy can read it. So my suggestion today, which would help me greatly, if you see something that opened your eyes today when you listen to this, let me know. Send me something on Facebook. Send me something on Twitter. Let me know that something today opened your eyes. And if you think it opens your eyes today, I think it's your job to share this. Put it out there. Make it possible for everyone to hear it. Again, my job, I always feel my job as a writer is to write to the common person. So this may sound a little technical as it starts out because it has to be written in a certain format. But as it goes on, you're going to be surprised. So just to read as it states. It says, I am Paul Sutliff. I give my address of the irreparable harm that could result in the South Carolina continuance receipt of those labeled refugees by the Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement Program. In addition, I have become aware of misinformation from the South Carolina plan that will cause irreparable harm to all taxpayers in South Carolina. Keep in mind, this case has gone federal. This could affect you in your state. I am the author of Civilization Jihad and the Myth of Modern Islam. It's published in 2016 by Tate Publishing. I also wrote Stealth Jihad Phase 2, Infiltrate American Colleges, which was published in 2014. I have a Bachelor's of Arts in Religion and Philosophy from Roberts Wesleyan College and a Master's in Education from Nazareth College of Rochester. One of the honors I have received for this work is to have some of my articles posted in the Middle East Forum's campus. My latest articles are currently posted, and you can find this too. Please go to today if you want to read along with me. paulsutliff.blogspot.com. Some of my research has benefited the FBI with information they did not previously have, inhibiting their ability to connect the dots. This is an update to two previous affidavits, which was in February and one was in May. So here's how I break this down. Let's talk about what cannot be known at present. Due to a lack of ability to provide accuracy in projections for the rest of 2016, I need more information to compare the state budget, county budgets, and the state plan as well as other crucial information to make an informed opinion on this matter. This also makes, we're talking about budget appropriations. Are they accurate? You can't find out. This is what I'm getting at. They don't give you the projections. They don't give you projections, you can't have an accurate budget. It's not possible. I believe there exist material facts in dispute that must be brought before a fact finder. There is just not enough information at present. It should be enough for due diligence to decide on stopping the program until this can investigate the budget issues to be reviewed by a neutral receiver or a legislative audit. I'm calling upon all those citizens of the United States listening to this. Do this. Call your state budget. Call and ask for a review of your state legislative budget regarding the refugee resettlement program. South Carolina plan states that the refugees receive $339 in what's called TAMF, temporary assistance for needy families, from the federal government. This does not include the cost of living arrangements from the federal government. This does not include the cost of living arrangement. TAMF funding is only available for refugees for the first 8 months they are in the country. This is why volunteer agencies, we call them VOLAGs, such as those who are defendants in the case, immediately take refugees upon their initial arrival to the welfare office to apply for state financial assistance. The VOLAGs benefit financially as the refugees are weaned off from the federal funding and on to state funding. So you thought they were going to be paying federal dollars for this? No. It's your state that pays the majority of the fee. On top of this, South Carolina has claimed they receive adequate funding from the federal government. A simple search using the word refugee on USAspending.com reveals that federal refugee funding for South Carolina has jumped tremendously since President Obama took over. In 2008, the budget was $140,000. 2009, it jumped to $245,680. 2010, it went up to $412,483. 2011, it went down a little bit to $339,408. 2012, $446,000. 2013, $382,000. Went down a little again. Then it shoots back up, $459,597. 2015, we're at $428,842. Now, $83,695. My comment on this bit, this year's federal fund has so much from the $112,000 the federal government demanded the return of $20,000, resulting in the figure of $83,695. Federal funding may have dropped as a small group of individuals began to raise awareness of the financial cost to taxpayers in South Carolina that each individual refugee brings. This is not the first time the federal government demanded South Carolina return some funding for refugees. In 2009, they demanded South Carolina return $87,678, stating it was due to a change in the formula for funding refugees. According to governing.com, South Carolina spent, now this is going to get interesting. We're talking about, let's talk about schools, guys. How is this going to be expensive to your local school? Now, South Carolina says they spent $9,514 per child on public education. This figure raises dramatically when adding the needs of a child who does not speak English and those who may not have had an opportunity for education in their home country. Remember, these females, these young ladies, may not have been allowed to ever go to school. We are going to have to deal with that. We have to educate them. That's one of the number one things that we do in America. We teach the public. We give them a chance. And in America, if you don't show up to school, we send someone to your door. Federal funding does not exist. Sorry, let me get back here. Those figures rise dramatically when adding the needs of children who do not speak English and those who may not have had an opportunity for education in their home country. Federal funding does not exist per school district for educating refugees, placing a higher tax burden on those living in the area. Additional costs may be incurred if the child is determined to have special needs. This could bring the cost of educating young children to as high as $1,000 per child. This is an approximate figure to get the cost of an educator to communicate with a child in their language and English. It also was arrived at with the possibility of the need to hire a translator for a community that does not have an educator that speaks the language of the refugees, and the cost of translations of materials being sent to the parents, which are required to be translated into their language under the law. Not having an accurate number of refugees to expect in South Carolina makes it impossible to determine the amount of cost to taxpayers. Further difficulties arise when considering the large amount of possible needs of refugees, from medical issues to educational issues. Federal funding may exist for medical issues. However, when they qualify for South Carolina financial assistance, they pass that cost to the state taxpayer. Anybody excited about paying that bill? Here's another thing that cannot be known at present. Are those labeled refugees compliant with the classification of refugee as stated under the law in the 1980 Refugee Act? President Obama set a goal of bringing 10,000 Syrian refugees to America by September 2016. On September 10th, 2015, he made this goal. As of a few weeks ago, Obama came out and told everybody he'd met that goal. So keep that in mind. The Refugee Act of 1980 specifically forbids the immigration of those who have committed persecutory acts on others. Quote, the term refugee does not include any person who ordered, incited, assisted, or otherwise participated in the persecution of any person on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. Again, it's part of Public Law 96212, Section 212. The Refugee Resettlement Program started under President Jimmy Carter. Passing the Refugee Act of 1980, it defined refugees as any person outside the country, such as national, or in the case of a person no nationality, is outside any country in which such person last habitually resided, and who is unable or unwilling to return to it, and is unable or unwilling to avail himself or herself of the protection of that country because of persecution or a well-founded fear of persecution. Now listen closely. On account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. Now, this is important. This whole little section is extremely important. The 1980 definition of refugee is A, any person who is outside of their home country. B, who also must be unable or unwilling to return. And C, that must be because of a persecution or a well-founded fear of persecution. If you don't meet all these three things, you cannot be considered a refugee. This is extremely important. Today, those labeled as refugees are selected and defined not by the American government, but by the United Nations. This brings into question whether those labeled as refugees do indeed meet the three criteria listed, simply because the UN officially designates those who have lived in Palestinian-controlled zones in Israel all their lives, they call them refugees. A 2007 UN magazine blurs the lines between refugees and migrants. Those two terms have very different meanings. However, the UN magazine refugee editor Rupert Coville sees this as a discussion more than a legality. This is yet another reason for the UN not to be allowed to select who becomes a refugee in the United States. Given that the UN does not apply the same definition, although they state they do in print, the situation of those designated as refugees through various things is essential. This becomes especially difficult since it has become public knowledge that the Islamic State is producing fake Syrian passports in exchange for a few hundred dollars. Now, this was evident, and The Guardian has written articles on this, and it has also been talked about. So you can find articles in The Guardian. Again, the links of the citations are on the site, paulsutliff.blogspot.com. You can find the actual citations if you want them, and they are good links. Okay, big back. We're going to talk about Director Comey because director of the CIA. In addition to the fact that the director of the CIA testified on June 15th of this year before congressional hearings, he said that Islamic State militants are training and attempting to deploy operatives for further attacks on the West, for more intense vetting system to be created or lead to a moratorium prohibiting any persons from Syria from entering the United States. This is from the director of the CIA. What did they do? Crap. They did nothing. What did they do? They said, hey, let's open our borders. Let's take as many people claiming to be Syrians in. They should be vetted. Oh, remember that. In November 2015, a terrorist attack on Paris was committed by at least a few persons who claimed to be Syrian. One of them, Ahmad al-Mohammed, had a Syrian passport that officials believed to be a forgery. Oh, wait a minute.
Was it a legal passport? It sure looked that way. The attack in Paris took place a few weeks after FBI Director James Comey testified on October 22, 2015, before the House Oversight Committee, that there are no databases that can be used to vet persons claiming to be from Syria. Director Comey emphasized there is no one who finds these people are who they say they are. Despite this, on a top intelligence panel, President Obama increased the amount of persons vetting or persons who claim to be Syrian refugees for the purpose of bringing them to the United States. The Center for Immigration Study reported that President Obama, now this is really a key thing here, they said that President Obama placed a temporary processing center open in Amman, Jordan, this past February, to speed up the resettlement process from 18 to 24 months procedure to just 3 months. Wait a minute. How does that increase the vetting procedure? Sounds like they cut it out, if you ask me. Again, that would be a treasonous activity as far as I can see. President Obama initiated a system to bring the 10,000 refugees to America without proper vetting. Keep that in mind. This is a guy who is willing to violate the law. From February to April 2016, they conducted 600 interviews a day with a total of over 30,000 interviews conducted for the purpose of streamlining a method to bring unvetted Syrian refugees to America. Again, according to Director Comey, FBI Director Comey, they cannot be vetted, yet we are being told in the United States they have been vetted. When the FBI director says, hey, they can't be vetted, the CIA director says it's not possible. Somebody explain to me how somebody with the title of POTUS, President of the United States, can say he knows better. Wait, isn't this the same president who doesn't go to his national security meetings? Isn't he the same president who doesn't find it important? I'm extremely concerned. President Obama is just not helping us. This issue is further complicated by the lack of understanding of whether Syrian Sunni Muslims truly meet the definition of refugee. Do they meet the three conditions? This is just exercising logic. Number one, yes, these persons are outside the country. Okay, are Syrians unwilling to return? Well, it's up to the individual. You know, it's interesting. I've been reading articles in Europe, and people who claim to be Syrian are going home on vacations. Wait a minute. How long did it take them to get to Germany? They get signed up for their benefits, and they go home. Wait, you notice Europe doesn't call them refugees? They call them migrants. Ooh, that's an important thing to think about. Do they fit the definition of migrant more than they do refugee? Well, number three, if persons slated to come to America as refugees are Muslim, are Syrian Muslims facing persecution? Or do they have a well-founded fear of persecution? The Islamic State is targeting and persecuting, let's think, religions other than Muslim, mostly Christians and Jews, they're persecuting. They are persecuting Shiite Muslims. They are persecuting homosexuals. You'll see them throwing them from heights, off buildings, off cliffs. Let's see, who else? They've been targeting journalists. So if you're a Muslim journalist, yeah, I guess you got reason to fear. Let's think about this. This one's a surprise. Females. In general, do females have a reason to fear? Well, this will kill you. This one's a big surprise. Females, ISIS placed a poster in Mosul when they came in, they took over. It was a request to bring out the women for sex jihad. So technically, if you are a Sunni Muslim Syrian, you have a reasonable fear of persecution. Did I say anything about the males? I definitely didn't. Because if they were taking part in this act legally, technically, they are not allowed into this country.
How about Muslims against Sharia? Are they being persecuted? Let's think about this. Comments that does not include those who are fleeing becoming soldiers of the Islamic State. Because, again, fleeing becoming a soldier of a country that you currently reside in is not considered a reason for you to be considered a refugee. Those persons who are coming from areas threatened by or currently under the control of the Islamic State have no reason to fear persecution if they do not meet any of the six conditions I mentioned above. The Islamic State would not persecute or cause fear of persecution. Most of those slated to be received by America as refugees do not qualify as refugees under the 1980 definition, simply because they have no reason to fear persecution, as they are Sunni Muslims and they want to live under Sharia. Sharia is the Arabic word for Islamic law. It is important to understand that in Islam, there exists no separation between mosque and state. The local mosque is part of the political machine under Islam. Historically, wherever Muslims rule, they force non-Muslims to also to obey Sharia. Muslims who want Sharia and flee serving the Islamic State are guilty of violating Sharia under the law that they wish upon others. So wait a minute. Is it considered logical to flee a country when you're saying you want Sharia and you're running away because they want you to serve? Hey, we've got a problem. You're violating the very law you expect me to follow. It doesn't work that way. This is just, I don't understand how we can be so stupid in allowing this. I'm going to go on. What can be known? Irreparable harm to South Carolinians through misinformation. The citizens of South Carolina have been misinformed by the state of South Carolina's statement on page 7, which said, its goals and objectives will comply with those specified in the Refugee Act of 1980. Doesn't sound like they're doing it, does it? As amended and pertinent official issuance of the Director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Note that South Carolina does not define the term refugee, and by implication infers that it's definition of the Refugee Act of 1980. This is misinformation to South Carolinians. The very misapplication of the term refugee threatens to disturb the very purpose for which South Carolina has established an Office of Refugee Resettlement Program. If they are not going to use the definition of refugee, we are doomed as a country. Again, a country that does not protect its borders is no longer a country. Misinforming the public of the definition of refugee for those who selected to enter South Carolina under this definition will place residents of South Carolina in a position of irreparable harm on several levels. Persons who will be arriving with the label refugee who are Syrian are selected not by the United States of America, but by the UN, a government agency outside the United States of America that designates persons as refugees who have not left their country. This misinformation given to South Carolinian residents will inhibit their ability to understand what's happening, and it won't allow them to prepare for those who are being granted this label. How about this one? Irreparable harm to South Carolina residents financially. This should shock you, and this is going to affect you individually in each and every state. Listen closely. While I mention the South Carolina plan, everybody here can also look for their local state plans. Go to your state web refugee resettlement program. If your state does not have one, do go to the federal site for the Office of Refugee Resettlement Program. Your state would be a Wilson-Fisk state. If you are a Wilson-Fisk state, then there is a list of who is in charge for your state, and you need to talk to them. If you have questions beyond that, please do contact me, and I'm going to give out my email what you do on the air. I will help you by providing any information I can. My email is brenresearch@yahoo.com. If you have any questions regarding
research that you need to do on your own state, please call me through emailing me. Okay, I'm just going to read this part to you, and this, again, should be shocking to you. The South Carolina state plan utilizes a shell game of delivering important information, which enables them to deliver a message full of propaganda that would otherwise inform South Carolina residents of intentional increases in the use of their tax dollars to bring persons who are labeled as refugees into the state. On page 7 of the state plan, it defines the goals and objectives of the plan to promote refugee economic self-sufficiency at the earliest possible time. It then provides objectives clearly defining the usage of federal tax dollars. A. Provide cash, medical, and other emergency assistance needed by individuals eligible for refugee resettlement services in order for them to obtain adequate living conditions. Well, let's think about that. Wait. B. Oh, wait, what did they do for B? Provide the necessary tools and opportunities for the elimination of obstacles standing in the way of refugees eligible for resettlement services while moving towards economic self-sufficiency. What is self-sufficiency to them? This is going to blow your mind. When I mention the tax money funding that the feds provide, they have refugee cash assistance, RCA. They have TANF, temporary assistance for needy families. They have family independence. They have refugee medical assistance, refugee social services. VOLAGs contract to provide services and are paid by the amount of refugees to whom they render services. VOLAGs rush refugees to the state welfare offices to increase the amount the agency is able to keep per refugee, which is paying to meet the needs of the refugees. This is done because the moment a refugee arrives in the state, they immediately qualify to receive finance public assistance. Refugees more state financial assistance and less federal assistance that is processed as a refugee towards independence. They call this, when they put somebody on your state taxpayers programs, they're calling it a move towards independence. How is putting someone on a welfare roll a move towards independence? If anybody has a knowledge on how that is called a move towards independence, please let me know. I cannot figure this out. I'm a little shocked. I still cannot figure that one out. I'm hoping someday I can. Then we have, let's talk about, hold on. I'm going to play a song for a second, and I'm going to come right back. I'm getting, might be an important question.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack.
He
married sucker punch, came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we can clearly
through our big black eye. All right, bye. I'm bringing on Martel. Lauren,
hey,
Martel.
Hey. Hey. How are you?
Hi. Good. Lauren Martel is the attorney for the case, and I wanted to introduce her and tell you a little bit about her. And we've been talking back and forth
for a little bit more, almost 2 years. It feels like 2 years now. I'm not sure exactly how long. We've talked about various things. And the big thing that we've been harping on is what can we do to get to the Truth in Refugee Resettlement Program? And amazingly, with my research and this, her goals for helping South Carolina have come together. And I'm kind of excited to see where we're going with this. So I wanted to give Lauren a little bit more of a chance to talk about what this case actually means. And that, and then we're going to talk about the importance of FOIAs and how, and a few other things that have to do with that. But understand, this is a historical case. And I think this is important to understand. Her first name is Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, and Martel with one L. So please understand, I hope Canada does the same thing. I realize we reach Canada with this voice from this with this show, and Canada needs to be doing the same thing. I've been talking to people up in Canada that have been telling me, these are people who are analysts. They're counterterrorism analysts. And they tell me there is absolutely no vetting of the people that Canada is bringing in.
Paul,
so Lauren,
are you introducing me?
Lauren, can you talk to us a little bit about the case and what you're allowed to say? And
I really can't talk a whole lot about the case because it's a pending litigation, but I'm really excited to share some things. And first of all, oh my goodness, what kind of CIA code did I need to get in to get into the host queue? That was funny, huh?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm the new guy at this, and apparently I hope this
you're
song played.
Great.
I don't know.
And
if
you know
did.
What? It actually, everything you said was a great segue for what I was going to say. And can you hear me okay? It doesn't sound like I'm under my pool, does it?
Okay. No, it sounds good.
So guess what's so exciting today about something that came out of Texas? And it was a press release that was just recently issued by Governor Abbott. And he, on behalf of Texas, and Texas has kind of been the lead dog in a lot of this. Now they're taking an executive stance, which is very good and strong. They led with their judicial stance in the Texas and the 26 other states versus the United States and subordinate agencies in what's known as the Brownsville, Texas case, which was actually affirmed by our Supreme Court, minus one Supreme Court justice, in probably one of the shortest orders that's ever been written, but they affirmed Judge Hannon's great order, which restrained unauthorized executive overreach. So that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about refugee resettlement nowadays. It morphed from the 1980 law, which was probably the last time that the law was actually done, you know, correctly. Whether or not that's a good law or not is a different story. But since then, they've sort of morphed it with executive directives and policies, which doesn't go through the proper course of how you're supposed to implement things that are going to have the kind of repercussions that these programs have. And so it's multiply faceted, flawed, from so many different directions, which brings me to, well, I'll get back to Governor Abbott. So the Brownsville, Texas case happened about a year. It got initiated about a year prior to us filing our lawsuit, which is now kind of known as the Bilbro lawsuit. And it's got 105 documents filed to date in the federal district court, one of them being your expert affidavit, which we appreciate. And none of the defendants have disputed whether or not you're an expert or not. So I'm going to say that we presented you as an expert, and so that's what the court has in front of them to look at, along with a few other experts that supported a voluminous amount of evidence, what I call prima facie evidence, which is irrefutable evidence on why hopefully our judge will follow along and put a restraint on some of this craziness that's happening with executive overreach.
That's so the big process, isn't it? It's executive overreach.
Executive overreach is when Obama says things like he has a pen and a cell phone, and then he goes ahead and does policies, you know, creates policy that's outside of even the Refugee Resettlement Act. And then what you're seeing, you know, I think I heard you talking about like CIA getting directives and what they should be doing versus what they're being directed to do from the head of the, you know, from the very top down. So that's why we're seeing a lot of chaos and confusion, and a lot of people who you would imagine their normal job would be to do the right thing, what we would consider taking care. And that's another good phrase for people, the audience, to know about, is the take care clause of our Constitution. Take care that our good laws in both South Carolina and also in the United States are being used. But as far as speaking about the pending litigation, I can really talk about some of the public, you know, documents. And then we have a court case. We're going to have a court hearing October 12th in the Columbia Division of the South Carolina District Court. And before that, the only big thing that I have that we're working on is and researching is the federal defendants have three U.S. attorneys. The state defendants have the Southern Poverty Law Center and some of the larger law firms in South Carolina. So it's like 15 lawyers against us.
Can you tell them how the Southern Poverty Law Center came in? Are you allowed to do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're representing one of the nonprofits. So the difference between our case and the Brownsville, Texas case, which again is the law of the land, is only slight. Most of our issues, we dovetailed in on all of their issues. We just added some. And so we included in our defendants the two multimillion dollar nonprofits that are, one, doing business in South Carolina, but now that we're in federal court also, you know, nationwide, and they're international.
I'm a little confused, Lauren. Did you say the phrase multimillion nonprofit?
Yeah, and I use that because in South Carolina, that's what that looks like. You know, we got documentation from our Secretary of State that, you know, it's just in the millions. You know, obviously when you get national and international, it's billions. But, you know, I use that for the South Carolinian aspect of it. But in a nutshell, this is what the Governor Abbott said. South Carolina is one of the 26 states that dove in on Brownsville, Texas. So they're a plaintiff. Imagine this in the Texas case. In our case, Governor Haley is a defendant, and she signed the state plan, which we're considering an unauthorized directive. So we're going to consider it null and void. We appreciate the whole vetting process and that argument, but in the past, there are a couple of cases where in the court system, that has been a bit of a distraction and can lead you down into a pitfall. It is true what you're saying, but it's not necessarily going to get to where we want to be, which is to restrain this stuff. So we're going to the head of, like, whether or not it was even authorized. So Governor Abbott joined, you know, the sort of momentum of the Brownsville, Texas case, and he issued a press release today of the state of Texas' intention to withdraw from the Refugee Resettlement Plan. And he is brutal against the federal government in this. I'm just going to go ahead and read that, a little part of this press release, because it's so well written. Governor Greg Abbott issued the following statement on Texas' intention to withdraw from the Refugee Resettlement Program. The federal government's Refugee Resettlement Program is riddled with serious problems that pose a threat to our nation. He does mention the director of the FBI has repeatedly declared the inability to screen the refugees. Even the inability to properly vet refugees and from other countries known to be supporters and propagates of terrorism, President Obama is now ineptly proposing a dramatic increase in the number of refugees to be resettled in the U.S. Empathy must be balanced with security. Texas has done more than its fair share of aiding refugees and accepting more refugees than any other state between October 2015 and March 2016. While many refugees pose no danger, some pose grave danger, like the Iraqi refugee with ties to ISIS who was arrested earlier in the year after he plotted to set bombs off in two malls in Houston. Despite multiple requests by the state of Texas, the federal government lacks the capability or the will to distinguish the dangerous from the harmless, and Texas will not be an accomplice to such dereliction of duty to the American people. Therefore, Texas will withdraw from the Refugee Resettlement Program. I strongly urge the federal government to completely overhaul a broken and flawed refugee program that's increasingly risking American lives. And that's just an amazing press release. South Carolina also in their state plan which I also refer to as an unauthorized directive, because Nikki Haley signed that without going through our legislature either. So we're attacking it on two fronts, not just the United States Constitution of the Take-Care Clause, but also our very well-written South Carolinian Constitution. When you have executive overreach, it's absolutely in a representative republic for it to function in a healthy manner that the checks and balances work. What you're seeing right now is a use of the federal district courts to do their job and to check out of control and unauthorized executive overreach and apathetic and, you know, neutralized legislature. So that's what we're doing, and that's pretty exciting. So you see what I'm saying? It's kind of
I want to piggyback on this, and I was going to spend time talking about FOIAs, but my problem is I may end up having to agree to go to the 2-hour show because I'm running out of time. I did want to spend time talking about FOIAs, and I realize I'm going to have to take another show for that. But I do want to piggyback on one of the things you'll find in my affidavit, which I think shocks the hell out of a lot of people. When I originally first shared my affidavit with some people in the media, the first thing that hit them was the end of this affidavit. So let me read you a little bit from the last end. I'm gonna say thank you for Lauren. Thank you for your time, and I really appreciate listening in. And I hope to have you back soon. I'll be talking to you later.
FOIAs are fun, and I really want to empower. That's what I'm really meant to do. Sorry, but this press release out of Texas is too exciting. I'm hoping South Carolina, if Nikki Haley does what she's supposed to do, South Carolina and many other states should follow suit with what Texas is doing right now.
I agree 100%.
FOIAs is a great thing, and everybody can do that. That's something that we can empower other people to do, and it's so crucial. And it's there so that everybody can really scrutinize and, again, check and balance their local governments, state governments, federal government. And it's very easy to do. And I know you have links that you can probably already put up. But, Paul, it's an honor. I've always enjoyed speaking with you. And I hope your audience feels encouraged, because when good people stand up and do the right thing, you know, we can tip the scales of justice back to where, you know, it's more balanced. And
there is a link on the to help fund this lawsuit. It's not a lawsuit. I don't know what the
we're
right,
in.
Is it lawsuit?
Yeah,
is the right term?
And I don't like to talk about it that much, but we are in depositions, and the court reporting costs are out there. So that would be, if there are people who have an inclination, there's a way to do that. And we're going to be taking some depositions, hopefully soon.
And depositions are the most costly thing of this case, from what I understand.
From a cost perspective.
All right. Unfortunately, I'm going to try and rush through this last piece, and I'm going to say thank you. And I will be calling you later. And I've got to thank you again.
Sounds good. God bless, okay. Paul. Bye-bye.
God bless. So I want to finish talking about the irreparable harm of terrorist infiltration. Now, let me tell you what I mean by this. What we do know currently, and this is something that should shock you, and I'm going to share with you, again, the importance of these last few pages that are on my affidavit. Terrorist infiltration through the Refugee Resettlement Program is not something new. We've seen it in 2009 when two Al-Qaeda operatives were located in Bowling Green, Kentucky as refugees. These two were, when caught, bragged of having attacked U.S. troops and having bomb-making experience. At the time, House Committee on Homeland Security Chairman Michael McCaul stated, "I wouldn't be surprised if there are many more than that. And these are trained terrorists in the art of bomb making that are inside the United States. And quite frankly, from a Homeland Security perspective, this really concerns me." It had been public knowledge since The Guardian on November 17, 2015, ease and simplicity of obtaining a fake Syrian passport. The article further states that the European border officials have no way of authenticating Syrian passports. So if you can't authenticate a Syrian passport, how do you verify? Somebody explain that one to me. Okay, October 22nd, 2015 was the testimony. Here's the thing we have to think about. We now know, as of this week, that there have been, in the past few years, a total of 44 persons arrested who came to this country under the title of refugee or immigrant, who have been supporting ISIS or committed acts in support of ISIS. And I'm talking about terror acts or have financed. We have arrested at least, and I say at least, 45 persons in this country who have arrested or shot and killed for their safety of others. The last one we have that was shot and killed 9/17/2016. His name was Adan Dahir. He was in South St. Cloud, Minnesota. Now, he was killed after stabbing 8 people at the St. Cloud Mall while making references to Allah. He is a Sudanese refugee. He was identified by his father. Now, this is important to think about, okay? 9/19, we have another one. We have Rahman, Ahmad Khan, Rahami. This is in Linden, New Jersey. On 9/17/2018, bombs were placed on the route of a charity run in New Jersey on Saturday, one of which went off, and on the streets of New York, one of the New York bombs. Okay, these are the people they're saying are okay to come to this country. Now, the other issue, second-generation refugees. I have traced a minimum of 12 persons who are second-generation refugees coming to this country who have been involved in supporting ISIS, have been arrested or shot by the federal government for the purposes of defending Americans. Now, here's the catch with this list. This list comes off of interactions with the Threat Knowledge doc. It's Threat Knowledge. Let me just read the site off for you fairly so I can get it correct to you. It is threatknowledge.org. So I recommend you go to threatknowledge.org and you do look Oh, God, did I click out? Hello? Okay. And I do recommend you go to the Threat Knowledge group and take a look at that site. I apologize to everybody if I just screwed things up. One of the problems of being the newbie, I'm still learning. Sorry about this. Go to threatknowledgegroup.org and take a look at that. Sorry about the mistake, ladies and gentlemen. I'm the newbie here. Please forgive me. Go to the Threat Knowledge group and take a look. You're going to find some interesting pieces, a list there regarding those who support who has supported ISIS. It's only a list. Oh, get this now. This is the important thing. This is only a list of persons who have supported ISIS. What's not covered? Persons who commit rape in the name of Islam. Persons who commit crimes in the name of Islam. Persons who commit terror acts who are not supporting ISIS, not listed on this case. And this is only a few years old. How far back can we go and how much more numerous can this get? This is only a few years old, this list. It only goes back about 3 years. And I have found a list that is names about a total of 50 to 60 people. Now, here's why I say the list has to be larger. A lot of the persons that are named on this list who are second generation, there's a problem. If I say they're second generation and they're not named, they are too young. When there are minors on this list, they don't give private information out. You cannot verify that they have been arrested before. You cannot verify that they have something going on that is illegal. It's a very, very difficult thing. So we're very limited in what we can know on the majority of things. That's part of the issue. what you, I get, my biggest thing I can tell you is, as listeners, get informed on what's happening in your local refugee resettlement program. Check your local volunteer agencies, Catholic Family Services, Lutheran World Services, World Relief. Your National Association of Evangelicals is pushing people in to your localities. In New York State, they said they were taking Syrians in Buffalo. They said they were taking them in Syracuse. But they're just starting to show up in schools in Rochester, New York also. And Rochester was not slated to take anyone. So these are things that are happening. I would tell people just to pay attention. Open your ears. You're going to be surprised at what's happening around you. Now, the people that are there, again, this is the one thing I haven't told anybody yet. The federal tax dollars run out after 8 months. So there is no federal support for these people after 8 months. The federal funding provided to the refugee is gone after 8 months. They may provide some funding to the agency helping, but the refugee gets zip after 8 months. So who pays for that? Well, remember, they considered the first thing they did was to take them to your state local agency and have the feds start paying for it. I'm sorry, have the state dollars start paying for it. So your tax dollars at work, responsible for what's happening. Is this really what you want? Do you want to be paying for people who come here and start to take over? This is a big concern to think about. Are you ready to start paying the bill for somebody else? I don't have that kind of money. I'm not willing to take that chance. Wake up, America. Civilization Jihad is in your neighborhood. Thank you for listening.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass.